Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, August 29th, 2009. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today I'm going to discuss the importance of doing your homework to land a reputable, a good literary agent. I'm also going to read from my new book, Love Pour Over Me, which should be out on the market early next year. So to begin, thank you for joining me again here at Off the Shelf, where we are going into our sixth year. We're just moving to a new platform here on Blog Talk Radio. To start with the literary agent tips that are invaluable actually, an important part of becoming a published book author is landing a reputable, and I put that, really stress that word, literary agent. I want to say that it is not, before I continue, it's not necessary to have a literary agent in order to have your manuscript signed with a publishing house, but there are many advantages to have one. For example, good literary agents, they make the process of becoming a published author smoother because they're familiar with the details of a book contract, which to a new writer can at times look a bit cumbersome or hard to understand. And many agents are also familiar with the details of major motion picture contracts, which are some of the toughest, kind of convoluted contracts for a writer to negotiate their way through. So you'd have help with that. And, of course, this comes in hand should your book be opted for a movie, which of course, happens, and hopefully it will happen to your book. Reputable literary agents, they also have established first person, not just email or somebody that they've just seen their name on the Internet, but they have first person relationships with editors, publishers, and even publishing marketing team leads. They know these folks personally. It could take a writer months or years to establish these kind of in-depth relationships. So that's a clear time-saving advantage in having a literary agent. And additionally, literary agents act as a go-between from the writer and the editor or the publisher, which many writers may already know. And because this is another advantage of having a good literary agent, because their commission is tied to the overall contract amount that they receive. If they get 20% of the overall contract for the book that they negotiate for you to sell with a publisher, for that reason, agents will often negotiate at the top price. They'll try to get the best contract and the top price for your manuscript for you. That's a huge benefit, a huge financial benefit for any writer. And writers who don't like to get mired down in these details, contract details, financial negotiations, should especially focus on getting a reputable literary agent. So what do you look for in a good literary agent? How do you go about landing one? Again, you don't need a literary agent to get a book published, but there are many publishers who also won't deal with newer or even established writers unless they have a literary agent or representation. So some of the things to look for in a literary agent, one of the first things you should do, you should look for a literary agent who, similar to how you would do your research, if you were seeking out a carpenter or a contractor to build your home, it's important for writers to focus on the professionalism of this business relationship. So do your due diligence so you can reap the rewards of your efforts for years to come. If you get a poor literary agent, you'll see the result of that as well. A good one is almost invaluable. So look for a literary agent who has a proven track record that you want to be a part of. You want to be a part of their track record. So to do this, you can ask to see an agent's client list. Many agents will list them if they have a website. Some agents don't have websites, but many do today. They will list a link on their website page that will show you a list of their clients. And these are authors that they've sold books to publishing houses for. There are a couple of benefits in checking out a literary agent's client list. One of them is, as you're searching for a literary agent, you can see what type of books that the agent places. And in large agencies, They may have several literary agents that work for one agency, and one agent may generally work with children's books. Another agent within that same agency might work with adult nonfiction books that are not predominantly sold to maybe colleges, and another or business nonfiction books. Another agent in an agency might work with books mainly that deal with women's issues or cultural issues. So when you look at their client list, you can see the type of books that they publish. And if it's a large agency house, you can go through and click on each of the agents and see what type of work they're accepting. A good resource to check for reputable literary agencies is the Association of Authors Representatives, also known as AAR, the acronym. They're online at www.aaronline.org. And again, that's www.aaronline.org. You can also check Writer's Digest, Poets and Writers, Literary Marketplace. There are others, but those are good directories that you can search for literary agents through. Knowing the types of authors that an agent handles, again, lets you know how experienced a particular literary agent is in dealing with publishers who work in your specific genre. And if you write literary books that maybe don't fit in a specific genre like science fiction or mystery or romance, you can see agents with a large agency or who own their own agency who are seeking literary material. For example, as I said, some agents only handle mysteries while others work with nonfiction books, and others accept a broad range of material. Some agents or agencies only work with authors who come recommend it to them from somebody else, perhaps an editor. And a lot of agents and agencies will take on new writers who've never been published before. So do your homework and submit your manuscript to the right person, because there's probably no quicker way than to get it returned than to send it to an agent who may love your book, but they simply don't work with the genre that you write in. This is going to save you time. It's going to save you postage. And although several agents now request and accept submissions via email. So, again, check the literary agent's website. All you do is do a search in a major engine for the agent that you're looking for. Or go to the AAR website or go to Writer's Digest. They also are online. Poets and Writers and Literary Marketplace are a couple of places you can check. And check for their specific submission guidelines. Some will ask for a synopsis. Some will ask for the first three chapters and a synopsis and a marketing plan, and some want the full manuscript, but most want no more than one or three chapters to start with. And it generally takes about 4 to 6 weeks before you hear back from a literary agent. Avoid agents who charge reading fees, and this is something that's pretty much widely known, but some newer writers may benefit to hear this or to be repeated, even for more seasoned writers who want a literary agent because they want to get published, but having a bad agent is probably or might be worse than having no agent at all. Several years ago, the practice of an agent taking a reading fee was more acceptable, but as this became more widespread, writers' unions began to sort of frown on this practice, and the reason being that a lot of literary agents were earning a sizable portion of their income through reading fees. So another way of saying this is the way literary agents earn their money is through commissions when they sell your book to a publisher. So agents who rely on reading fees, they probably are not selling that many books to publishing houses, or they're not getting good enough deals to earn an income or a living off of those commissions alone, which tells you a lot, because that's exactly what literary agents are supposed to do, sell books to publishing houses, get you a good contract, price on your contract, so they can earn their commissions. So that's how that works. An agent is not like your therapist or your buddy or your chum. Their job, and I cannot stress this enough, their job is to represent your material to a good book publisher and land you the best deal possible. That way they get their commissions and they don't charge you reading fees to try to make money. They make it through their commissions, and it's that simple. Agents also, at times, if they do things out of the norm, like they have to travel to see a publisher to put your book in front of them, or they have some exorbitant mailing fees, they may kick those back to the author in a monthly invoice. But that shouldn't happen often. And whenever you get billed or sent an invoice by a literary agent, ask for details on all their mailing, that you make sure that you're paying for yours and not someone else's or the agent's personal material, and you can request that. Agents who do not have a proven track record of landing getting good contracts for writers with book publishers are likely not the folks you want to hold your manuscript and hold it up from being published after you sign a contract with the agent. And do not get caught in the trap of being asked for an administrative fee, something that I recently experienced personally, or being told that the agency is a management agency so they can charge administrative fees. Do not get caught up in the lingo, whether it's administrative fee or reading fee. Reputable literary agents, whether they go by literary agent or management agency, they do not charge these fees. They make their money off of commissions. So just stay out of that lingo game. Again, avoid paying reading fees or administrative fees to literary agents before they would say that they would represent you. Most agencies that are reputable don't ever request a reading fee or an administrative fee. Also, steer clear of agents who tell you, oh, how wonderful your book is, and they go on to explain that they can sell your manuscript if you use a specific editor and they give you the name and the contact information for the editor. Again, most reputable, there are a lot of literary agents out here. It looks like there are a lot of car dealers out here and other people in businesses. Does not mean that everybody carrying a title is someone that you should trust. But most reputable literary agents will simply suggest that you have the book edited if it's needed. Then you can reach out to them later should they still be interested in taking submissions at that time. But they generally won't tell you, you know, your book needs to be edited, and then contact Denise Turney to do the editing for your book. They'll just tell you it needs to be edited, send it back to you, or it could benefit from being edited. After you do that, you can contact them again to see if they're interested in reading the revised version of your manuscript. Talk to published book writers in your genre. Ask them for literary agent recommendations. It's no different than if you were shopping for anything that's going to impact your life long term. A good way to do this is to join a professionals writing group, and thanks to the internet, there are several on the internet. And make sure that professional writers group, and some also meet at bookstores, consist of new and established authors who themselves have a professional and proven track record. So when you join a professionals writers group, you want, you know, a mix of writers. New writers who perhaps haven't been published before, but they're serious about the craft. Writers who have some experience or maybe published one or two books or in some magazines and newspapers, and maybe a few writers who published four or five or more books themselves, but a professional group of people. And then you can ask them for recommendations on good literary agents. And as you network and work your way through the group so people are familiar with you, people will be happy to give you recommendations. Also, remember that the book business is just that. It's a business. Be professional, whether you're blogging or on Twitter or MySpace or on Facebook. Be professional as you're always making a first impression, even when you don't think anyone is watching or listening to you. So always give your best. Join professional writers organizations. Other organizations that you can join are the National Writers Union or the New York City Writers Union. The New York City's Writers Union is free to join. Participate in dial-in conversations. They'll often have what you call a conference call. You can participate in those and ask about reputable literary agents. After an agent contacts you, congratulations, first of all. After an agent contacts you and tells you that they want to represent you, Make sure that you do your homework and check the agent's client list. This is invaluable. As I was telling you earlier, it eliminates the pain of being hoodwinked by an agent who invents or fictionalizes the authors they have worked with. Again, thanks to the Internet, a quick review of an agent's client list. You can do that simply by searching for two or three authors online that the agent says they've worked with, and many authors have websites. Simply email them. Tell them that you're thinking of working with the agent and would like to know how that agent's experience, their experience with that particular agent has been. I find that most authors be very forthright and happy to help you, especially if they know that you're serious about the craft. This, I can't stress this enough. It can save you lots of headaches as we come to the end of these tips on how to find a good literary agent. It can save you lots of heartache, headaches, and not so well spent money down the road. Do your homework and just give yourself time, maybe even a week or two, to look for a good literary agent. And you can send out, most agents don't like you to do simultaneous submissions, but you could send out, I don't know, maybe once a month to a different literary agent or once every other month, whatever feels comfortable to you until you land an agent. If you don't stop, you should land an agent. Just keep doing your homework and keep reaching out. Put in the time to, you've put in the time to write a finished manuscript, which is a lot of work, and then you've put in the time to land, so put in the time next to land the right literary agent for you, to carry your manuscript from across the bridge, from you to them, to a solid book publisher, which could help you start a long and rewarding writing career. And lastly, please contact us here at Off the Shelf after you land your literary agent to let us know when your new book will be coming out and who's going to be publishing your new book after you land an agent, because that's the work agents do. And they would get your book to a publisher, get you a good contract, and you can let us know when your new book's coming out so we can celebrate this great achievement with you. So remember those tips. Check the agent's client list. Do your homework. Don't pay for reading fees or administrating fees. And those are tips that I've learned along the way. Some come from personal work with literary agents. Some have come from best-selling author friends of mine who share their own experiences down through the years with me. And if you incorporate those tips into your writing career, they can truly, truly pay off wonderfully. And now I want to introduce you to my fifth book and my new novel, Love Pour Over Me. Just to tell you a little bit of background about the book, I started writing this new novel about 2 years ago. For some reason, I'm kind of like on this three-year cycle when it comes to putting out a new book. But the book is a love story about people at different levels and different life stages. The relationships in Love Pour Over Me, they're complex and multi-layered. And I think there are people in the book who I think readers will clearly and strongly not like at the start of the book. But as the story progresses, these same people, I think readers will come to appreciate and better understand near the end of Love Pour Over Me. So to begin, I'm going to actually start from the very start of the book, of Love Pour Over Me. This is not the finished copy. I still have to send it to my editor, so you're getting the benefit of seeing how I work on creating the story. So I'll begin with chapter one. Raymond Clark lay across his bed, and an empty bowl of popcorn was on the floor. The television was turned up loud. Carl Lewis threatens to break Bob Beamon's historic long jump record at the Olympic trials in Los Angeles this weekend, an ESPN sportscaster announced. Beamon's record has stood for 16 years. Lewis, the sportscaster's voice droned on. Raymond got so caught up in the mention of the upcoming Olympic Games that he didn't hear the front door open. Ray! His father, Malcolm, shouted as soon as he entered the house. What? What? Boy, if you don't get your... Raymond leaped off his bed and hurried around the corner into the living room. Dad? He watched his father wave his hand over the sofa, atop his Reeboks, sports bag, and track shoes. Get this trash up! Silence filled the house. In the interlude, Raymond grabbed his belongings, and going back into his bedroom, he tossed them across his bed. His father made his way into the kitchen like a dark shadow. Frustrations from having spent 10 years working at a drab automobile plant where he drilled leather seats into one Ford Mustang after another while his line supervisor stood at his shoulder and barked, "Focus, Malcolm, get your production up," followed him there. It was in the furrow of his brow and in the pinch of his lip. "Ray!" Raymond cursed beneath his breath before he left his room. Seconds later, he stood at the kitchen's edge. He watched his father toss an envelope on the table. "Letter from Baker came in the mail. Something about you getting some awards when you graduate." He reached to the center of the kitchen table for a bottle of Jack Daniels. He stopped hiding the alcohol years ago when Raymond turned 5. The alcohol looked like liquid gold. Felt that way to Malcolm, too. 8 tonight. Malcolm took a long swig of the whiskey and squinted against the burn. He tried to laugh but only coughed up spleen. "You're probably the only kid in the whole school who got a letter like this. Everybody up at Baker knows nobody cares about you. Letter said they thought I'd want to let all your relatives know you're getting some award so they come out and support you." Again, Malcolm worked at laughter but instead coughed a dry, scratchy cough that went long and raw through his throat. "We both know ain't nobody going to be there but me and you're sorry, but don't mean nothing anyhow. They're just giving these diplomas and awards away nowadays." On his way out of the kitchen, bottle in hand, he shoved the ladder against Raymond's chest. Raymond listened to his father's footsteps go heavy up the back stairs while he stood alone in the kitchen. When the footsteps became a whisper, he looked down at the ladder. It was printed on good stationery, the kind Baker High School only used for special occasions. Didn't matter, though. Raymond took the ladder and ripped it once, twice, three times, over and over again, till it was only shreds of paper. Then he walked to the tall kitchen wastebasket and dropped the bits inside. "Ray!" He froze. From the sound of his father's voice, he knew he was at the top of the stairs. "Give me that ladder so I'll remember to go to your graduation tonight." Raymond twisted his mouth at the foulness of the request, the absolute absurdity of it. He didn't answer. Instead, he turned and walked back inside his bedroom. He grabbed his house keys and headed outside. At the edge of the walkway, he heard his father shout, "Ray!" Raymond didn't turn around. He walked down the tree-lined sidewalk the way he'd learned to walk since kindergarten, with his head down. He stepped over crazed cracks in the worn sidewalk, turned away from boarded windows at two empty, dilapidated buildings, and told himself the neighborhood was just like his father, old, useless, unforgiving, and hard. A second-floor window back at the house went up. Malcolm stuck his head all the way out the window. "Get your butt back here," he hollered down the street. Raymond sprung to his toes and started to run. His muscular arms and legs went back and forth through the cooling air like propellers. They were devices he used to try to take off, leave the places in his life he wished had never been. It was what he was good at. All his running had earned him high school honors in track and field. He was Ohio's top miler. He made Sports Illustrated 4 times since middle school. "Ray! Yo, man, you better go back." Joy, a troubled 18-year-old neighbor who dropped out of school in the 10th grade, chuckled. He leaned across a Pontiac Firebird, waxing its hood. "If you don't, your old man's going to beat you good." "Ah, Ray's cool." Stanley, an equally troubled 21-year-old who pissed on school and failed to get a diploma, a man who couldn't read beyond a third grade level, said, "And we know the brother can run." "Damn, we all can run," Stanley laughed. "Ray, remember that night we ran away from that Texaco station? Our wallets all fat," Joy laughed. He talked so loudly, Raymond worried he'd be overheard. "Thought we agreed to let that go," Raymond said. He looked hard at Joy, then he looked hard at Stanley, and the 9-month-old deal was resealed, another secret for Raymond to keep. One glance back at his father's house, and Raymond started running again. He ran all the way to Trotwood Recreation Center, 6 miles further into the city. He stayed at the Recreation Center watching one intramural basketball game after another for more than an hour until he felt certain Malcolm had, in a rare respite, drunk himself into a modicum of civility. Then he turned over his wrist, saw it was after 5 o'clock, and ran every step of the 6 miles back home. The living room was empty. All the way from the second floor, he heard a noise akin to the rise and fall of a buzzsaw. He frowned toward the stairs and mumbled, "Sleep." ESPN was still on in his bedroom. He went straight to his closet and pulled out his favorite pair of black nylon dress pants, a crisp white button-down shirt, and a tie. 15 minutes later, he was showered and dressed. His father was drunk, that he knew. It always went this way, every night. After all, like a religious habit, he'd spent his early childhood watching his father drink half a bottle of whiskey soon after he arrived home from work. When he was a little boy, he'd sit across from Malcolm at the kitchen table and swing his legs back and forth in a pendulum clock sort of way while he watched his father turn a new shiny glass bottle up until it reached empty. He always brought a toy into the kitchen with him then, a race car or a plastic airplane. He pushed the toy back and forth across the table and went vroom, vroom, but he never took his eyes off of his father. It was a time gone like cement down in the Raymond psyche. That was years ago. Since then, Raymond had gotten into a few fist fights and gone on more than one stolen car joyride with neighborhood boys he hoped would take him in as good friends, but who never did. But he'd endured. And as I come to the end or the midway part of the first chapter, I continue. He dodged cops when they knocked on the house door last spring. He just returned home from school, mercy abounding. Malcolm was still at work. With their stiff blue caps squarely atop their heads, the cops questioned Raymond about the robbery at a nearby Texaco station. A wrong for Raymond burst out of a last-ditch effort to gain a neighborhood friend, but now filled with regret. Raymond's academic and athletic reputations convinced the cops that he was innocent. His refusal to rat out Joey and Stanley kept them from going to the big house for the third time in less than 2 years. Never mind that Joey and Stanley kicked his butt when he was a kid until he bore new bruises, once not put there by Malcolm. Never mind that cops badgered him, pounding Malcolm's living room table and offering, "Ray, if you tell us what part Joey and Stanley played in the heist, we'll make sure nothing happens to you and we'll go light on them." Raymond didn't tell. Not for him, Joey wouldn't be waxing his car right now, and Stanley wouldn't be standing around trying to find something interesting to do. Even with the run-in with the law and despite Malcolm's drunken rages, once only verbal assaults would burst forth into outright physical beatings that called for blood when Raymond reached puberty. Raymond had found a way to stay alive. He made it to 17. He was running a brush across the top of his hair when the phone rang. I'm going to stop there. And thank you for joining me here again at Off the Shelf. I've just read from a new book, which should be out early next year, Love Pour Over Me. It's online at my website, a few of the early chapters at www.chistell.com. Please join in. I want to thank you again for listening to Off the Shelf. It's so good to be back on the air after a year hiatus. We're now in our sixth year, and I'm delighted to have you here with me again. Please tell your family, friends, colleagues, and book lovers everywhere to tune into us here at Blog Talk Radio on Off the Shelf. In the coming days, we're going to have feature interviews with established, best-selling, up-and-coming writers, editors, agents, and other movers and shakers in the book business. Again, please visit me online at www.chistell.com. And again, thank you for tuning in to Off the Shelf. Remember that you are valued, loved, and truly blessed. Keep writing and reading great books.